everybody. It's Nicole Byer here with some hot takes from Wayfair. A cozy corduroy sectional from Wayfair? Yeah, that's a hot take. Go on and add it to your cart and take it. A pink glam nightstand from Wayfair? Scalding hot take. Take it before I do. A mid-century modern cabinet from Wayfair that doubles as a wine bar? Do I have to say it? It's a hot take. Get it at Wayfair.com and enjoy that free shipping too.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hey, I'm Jamal Simmons. Welcome to Trailblaze.
Hey, Jamal. I'm Nayara Haq. We are here today to talk about the America we're becoming, the people, the politics, the policy, all of those things. And of course, we do want you to subscribe to our podcast and our channel. Jamal, we're only like 14 days out of the election. What do you got in your mind?
Wow, it's 14 days. I'm nervous as a cat in a room full of rocking chairs. I just do not know what is going to happen. I think it all depends on who shows up on election day. I know we always say that, but I think that might really be true.
Yeah, the margins of error, right, plus or minus 2 to 3 points, that's the margins between all the polls and the battleground states. And we could sit here all day and talk about how could it possibly be so close. But I don't think Democrats are the only nervous people.
Can we just get it out of our system, though? It is crazy. It is bananas that we are in the middle of an election with a guy who has been convicted of a felony, found liable for sexual abuse, fines for fraud from his company, indicted several other times, impeached twice, right? Learned nothing from his time in the White House, still can't figure out what to do in the middle of a natural disaster, and yet it's tied.
Let's add on to that. He can't complete a coherent sentence. He can't read from a basic script. And in the case of a medical emergency in the audience, his solution is to stand there and listen to music for 30 minutes. Right? That, I think that really broke me when it came to this is a possibility for American leadership on the world stage.
I know. It's really something bananas. It's really something. Well, what we are finding is that people are showing up. People are voting all over the place. We are seeing millions of Americans already show up and vote in states like Georgia and Michigan. So the early votes are already happening. States like Georgia and Michigan, we're seeing them all over the country. I think now there's like a dozen or so states that are already in the middle of early voting. So if you have not early voted and you live in one of those states, please check to make sure. And you should go vote as soon as possible.
I'm glad you mentioned early voting because we're seeing some really interesting data come out of there. North Carolina, for example, early voting well underway. You're seeing some record numbers. It's something that Donald Trump had discouraged before, right? But then suddenly there's a disaster that hits Appalachia and white working class. And now Donald Trump wants to see people voting remotely by mail and all these other operations. And it goes to show that all of the ideas that he puts forward are really about what works better for him. The hypocrisy doesn't bother him. It doesn't bother the MAGA people. They very clearly are in this to win. One of the places where the voting restrictions is going to bite them, though, is in Montana. And I know it's not a presidential state people are worried about. It is a balance of the Senate state, aka, mm-hmm. Are we going to actually have national protections for abortion rights? The seat there's a carpetbagger, Sheehy, who... He's a veteran, bajillionaire, made money in tech, and he shows up and says, I'm going to run against...
And when you say Sheehy, you're not making like a gender reference. That's actually his name, right? Sheehy.
Yes.
Okay. For a second, and I was like, is that Tester, a pronoun thing? Are we doing a pronoun thing? Oh, no. That's exactly what
No, 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 no. Okay. So, thank you. That was unintentional, but really funny. He's running against John Tester, who is that last bastion of this idea where you can be from the Mountain West, you can be rugged individual and still be a Democrat who believes in things like Social Security and healthcare for most people. They decided that they were going to have really strict voter ID laws where you could not register same day, you had to have an ID. And guess what? The Republican judge upholds that. And who does that discount in Montana? All of these sovereign state dudes who are, you know, the mountain men, like, no right. Government's going to take my ID and get my information. So congratulations. You are suppressing your own voters, Donald Trump.
Yeah, God bless him. I always thought, you know, people who decided they just weren't going to pay their taxes and all that. I mean, they didn't work out well for Wesley Snipes, but I guess, you know, Wesley Snipes was also black. So we'll talk about that. What I do know is happening right now is we have a fantastic guest who is joining us today, and I want to welcome her to our studio. She is my friend and yours, Melanie Russell Newman, from Planned Parenthood, Planned Parenthood Action Fund, Planned Parenthood for America Action Fund. And so we want to welcome Melanie. She also was at the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund and led communications for DOJ, Department of Justice, and the White House OMB and DNC. And she's just done all kinds of things, been all over the place. But she is somebody who can talk to us about something incredibly important in this election and in previous elections, the role of abortion, the role of women in this particular election, because she's at Planned Parenthood.
I know Melanie from both of us sharing a folding table in the Obama general election. And that is a long, long time ago now. I do not feel nearly that old, but now we have children with husbands and careers of our own. And it's just wonderful to have you here, Melanie, to talk us through what is happening with a younger and older set of voters now that we don't have the protections of Roe v. Wade. Melanie, what all are you working on in this last, you know, this last sprint towards the election?
Well, thank you so much for having me, Jamal and Aira, both of whom I've known for way too long. And yet, don't we all still look so young?
We do. Melanie is such
a good
to
each other. Not, we don't look young to young. We don't look young to young people.
Speak for yourself, Jamal. I think me and Aira are doing it. Anyway, the Action Fund is, you know, we are in a sprint to the finish to elect pro-reproductive health and rights champions from the top of the ticket on down. We, you know, our president and CEO, Alexis McGill Johnson, is barnstorming the country, talking to volunteers and Planned Parenthood Action Fund members and supporters about the importance of this election and about voting, the importance of actually showing up. So you can support Planned Parenthood in many different ways. But if you really want to make an impact in this moment, the best thing we can do is get people out to vote. And so that's what we're working on. And right before I joined this call, I watched this really incredible video. It's a New York Times video that was on Instagram of a doctor in South Carolina describing what it is like to provide care in a state that has banned abortion, but with exceptions for rape and incest. And she describes a call she had with the sheriff's office, because you have to call and report the rape and the victim. And she had performed an abortion on a rape victim who's 12 years old. And the questions were about, you know, how, what is the age of the mother? And she said, are you referring to the rape victim? And the sheriff said, yes, whatever, you know what I mean. She said the victim is 12. They asked things about the victim, and then they asked her things about herself. What's your age? What's your ethnicity? She asked for a case number at the end of the call. They said, you don't get a case number. And then she said when she got home that day, she had a message on her cell phone saying, oh, I forgot to give you the case number, except she had never given this officer her cell phone number. She called from the office. The concerns about what's to happen are not based on things we don't know, because it's already happening. Doctors are already feeling the pressure, the fear, the risk of abortion bans in these states to just provide health care to people who need it.
So just to put a pin on this, this doctor performed an abortion on a 12-year-old rape victim, was kind of faced an inquisition from the sheriff, who she had to call to walk through this. And then the sheriff called the doctor back on a cell phone number that she had never given the sheriff. So they found her number on their own and contacted her.
Yes, that's right. And, you know, I think she tells a story because there is, I think, a gap in people not believing that what Project 2025 really wants to do. track people's movements, track women's mm-hmm. menstrual cycles, track doctors' care in detail. Mm-hmm. But we are not, this is not something we are imagining will happen, because it is already happening. In Texas, they are already trying to track pregnancies. Even before Roe was overturned in 2022, the state of Missouri, under their abortion ban, wanted to track people's menstrual cycles so they could try to determine who may have had an abortion. That was in 2019.
Wow.
The idea that rape and incest could be exceptions, I think, has brought along many people of faith over the years, but they don't understand, or have only now starting to understand, what the actual real life implications are. The average time to even process a rape kit is multiple years in most counties and jurisdictions. So that is well past a pregnancy has happened. So right now, legally, that sheriff could have said, nope, you haven't proven a rape yet. We don't have this, this, and that information, all this. So these exceptions make sense for a certain set of politicians. They don't work. They come up against reality.
They're not practical, and they are designed only for political purposes, certainly mm-hmm. not based in the needs of actual people and their lives, and certainly not based on what is best for the practice of medical care. And that's, I mean, what we know right now is that the majority of Americans, 80% of Americans, believe abortion should be legal. Mm-hmm. Majority of Americans also believe that politicians are at no point in pregnancy more qualified than doctors mm-hmm. and women to decide what should happen to women's bodies and what type of health care we should receive and when.
Let's not leave that too quickly, right? Somewhere between, so you've got an 80% number. I've seen numbers as low as 67 or 70%, right? But let's say it's 70 to 80%. 70 or 80% of people in the country don't believe in anything, right?
You it's can't rare that we agree on anything. And it's a plurality.
And so that's the part that's really, that mind boggles me, that that these Republican politicians, the MAGA, and particularly the MAGA ones, right? Like these people who are these extremists, believe that they can impose a system. Not, I guess they've done, they're doing it. Let's believe it. They can impose a system on the vast majority, like 80% of the American population, that does not believe it, based upon their small beliefs, whether it's just political control, religious control, whatever it is. That's just inherently un-American.
But here's the excuse that they'll use, right? They'll make it into an American constitutional argument. But, you know, we just returned it to states' rights, which I don't know anybody who understands the history of immigrants or Black people in America who hears states' rights and thinks, you're protecting my freedoms. Because we all know that this is what the federal government is meant to do, is protect a universal standard of individual liberty and freedom and equal access. And you know what? If the federal government has had to come in and desegregate schools to make that happen, yep. It will do that. Right. So this idea that I'm supposed to feel better as a suburban woman, that states' rights managed by a bunch of local elected officials will be better for my health care. I'm like, oh, no, I'm not buying that argument. Don't try to spoon feed that to me as a Donald Trump gave me a gift here.
So, Melanie, when you're looking at the numbers of the people, not just the people who support it, but the people who seem to be politically motivated by it. Right. There was an NBC poll last week that said the number one issue for people, not just broadly, like what are they concerned about, but the issue that will cause them to, the single issue that will cause them to vote, like 22% of people said abortion. What is that? Who are those people, right? Who abortion is the number one issue that will motivate them to vote. Who are you guys finding are the biggest movers in this political environment?
I think that same poll found that it was Gen Z women were a large number of that. But I saw a different, it may have also been NBC, a piece yesterday about women over 50 being a mm-hmm. huge motivating group in this election. And listen, I did a deep dive on Friday night. What I like to do is look at demographics of voters.
I hope you had a good glass of wine, and I hope your husband was, you know, taking care of your child, your children.
It was post-bedtime.
She probably did a deep dive because she was looking at her children and looking at her daughter being like, oh my God, what are we setting up for the next
exactly.
4 years?
Exactly. So on Friday night, I did a deep dive of the demographics and who's actually moving this election. You know, we've heard a lot about Black men. This is what drove my interest. Was I think that that's a red herring that's being thrown out there to distract attention from who actually needs to be voting in this election, which is white people, non-college educated white people take up 40% of the voting population.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And so.
And in some of these states, it's as much as, I think Michigan, it's like 51%
exactly,
of the vote
exactly.
in Michigan.
Black yeah. people are 14% of the eligible voting population. And the top 8 states that those Black people live in, none of them are swing states. It's
yep.
California, D.C., Florida. None of those places are going to swing this election. And so if we're talking about the populations we really need to reach, it is that white women over 50 who fought for Roe and now want their granddaughters, their great-grandchildren to have the same rights that they had. And it is Gen Z, those new voters, first time in the electorate, really, they know as well as anybody because they are coming into adulthood with fewer rights than their mothers had.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw an AARP poll from survey from 2022 or analysis from 2022, where they said that in the last weeks of the 2022 midterm election, we saw a surge of women 65 plus, the AARP, you know, kind of demographic. We saw them surge toward the Democrats. And that was part of what blunted what we thought was going to be what everyone kept talking about, this red wave that was coming toward the country and in fact turned into like just barely a trickle, right? Like we should have, the Democrats were expected to lose as many as 43 seats, lost in the single digits, won a Senate seat. So, I mean, just thinking about 2022 for a second, as we're all thinking about 24 in this election, what do you all remember? What do you remember, Melanie, from kind of how abortion played in that 2022 election that we should be paying attention to this year?
When abortion's on the ballot, we win, baby. That's what I remember from 2022. we won 5 ballot initiatives that no one thought was possible in states that no one thought we could win in. Kansas. I mean, and this year, abortion is on the ballot in 10 states. Mm. And several key states, Florida, there's an a ballot initiative on the ballot in Florida, Arizona, the list is long, New York State, Maryland. Mm-hmm. Abortion drove turnout. In 2022, it was the year Dobbs was overturned. And before, we had a ton of impact data. We didn't have as many stories at that time about what was actually happening because it was still unfolding before our eyes. Now we have 2 years worth of people trying to access care, of people bleeding out in hospital parking lots, waiting for their doctors to say, okay, you are close enough to death for me to give you this abortion. Women in Louisiana getting C-sections as miscarriage care because they can't give abortions. And they aren't even using medication abortion in Louisiana because they've passed a law to make it a controlled substance. The Texas, they're tracking women's movements. They're tracking women's periods. Their SB 8 is still on the books, which allows a domestic violence abuser to sue his wife if she decides she wants to get an abortion because her husband is abusive.
It's on, even in the states where it's not literally on the ballot, it is on the ballot with many of the Senate seats.
Absolutely.
That we're looking
Absolutely.
At. Maryland is one of those states, right, where it could shift the balance of whether or not the Senate becomes a Democratic Senate and we get that legislative protection that we all want at the federal level. That's the Larry Hogan race. He has come out against Trump. He was, you know, somebody who's kind of towed the line, and the ads in Maryland consistently bombard his waffling on abortion rights. And it is very, very compelling to see that and be a voter in a state and see that and realize it's not just about whether or not you like Donald Trump or you like Kamala Harris. These individual Senate seats really, really matter. And I hope that also helps drive turnout in these elections. Melanie, I do want to connect this to a broader issue we're seeing about how women are being talked about this election cycle. Liz Cheney and Kamala Harris have been out in the road together, largely talking about this idea of democracy, but they do translate it into the idea of protecting the history and legacy of so much that has been fought for, that we just accepted as basic rights in American society. And I get that appeals to seniors, older women, that idea of the legacy you're leaving behind. But the response that we get from J.D. Vance and Donald Trump is just to insult their intelligence, right? Or insult their looks. Or I've even seen some Russian paid trolls online saying, oh, Kamala's going to do Five Guys. And I don't mean that she's going to be going there to get a burger, right? Like, this is the way they have been talking about and to women. What are they thinking? How is this supposed to help them in this moment?
Well, I just don't, I think men are not okay. No disrespect, Jamal. I think you're fine. But I think men are not okay.
I haven't always been the upstanding guy.
I think there is something to be said, and, you know, about the radicalization of men. That's the conversation that, you know, it is not, why aren't Black men blindly supporting Kamala Harris? It is, why aren't men supporting Kamala Harris? All men.
Well, you know, I say that because listen, I wasn't always as progressive on some of these questions. And I do think that, I think what it shows is that there's a path, right? Because if we just say to men, like, oh, men are all bad and they're not really thinking about this, and I don't think that's what you're saying right now, that we should just sort of wash our hands of them. But there is a way to sort of movement along the spectrum. And as they start to have, I think, conversations and real understanding about what this means in real life, which is why these stories that you're telling, I think, are so compelling. Because I think in theory, you're like, yeah, maybe that shouldn't be legal, or maybe we should stop that, or maybe whatever. But then you start talking about this, what this means for your sister, or what this might mean for your partner, or what this might mean if you get somebody pregnant and that wasn't on your bingo card about what you were trying to do right now, and you can't actually go take care of that. You know, like, we got to talk to men about the real life world that they're, you know, these choices are leading us toward.
But it's so much more than abortion. Well, to Melanie's point about the challenge or the radicalization of men that's been encouraged by someone like J.D. Vance, who's 40 years old, who doesn't even talk about the children that he has with his wife as his kids. They're always her kids.
Yeah, like, it's true.
Is it that they're seeing data that shows this is a movable message, or Trump and J.D. Vance can't help themselves and just, this is the only thing that they have, is to just be mean and crude?
No, it is. It's all about control. And there is I'm definitely not talking about all men. I am talking about those men that are, that have been, radicalized online, into believing that, you know, the traditional wife, you know, they follow the traditional wife meme, mm-hmm. and believe that women should be in a certain place. I saw a picture yesterday of a college student in Texas holding a sign saying abolish the 19th Amendment. That's what I'm talking about. There are lots of men who just don't know how reproductive health works and abortion works, and those are the movable men. But we are in a serious crisis, honestly, of men feeling a loss of control where, you know, their wife has divorced them, their boss is a woman and she's a you know, someone he doesn't like. You know, now this bossy woman is running for president and the Senate candidate, everybody's a woman around me. What's happening to men? And men are getting soft and men are being turned into women at school. boys are going to school boys and coming home girls. Oh, it's scary, but it is actually happening. And if we don't have a conversation, it goes beyond this election, because no matter what happens in this election, and in fact, in the event that Kamala Harris wins, I think we will see the same type of blowback we saw to the Obama presidency among white people, the same type of blowback from men across races. And so if we are not talking about that now, we will be behind the curve in supporting her presidency and getting her reelected 4 years from now.
Well, here's a fun data point. All three of us are raising young boys.
Let's go. Right? Get these boys right.
Also,
and daughters. Mm-hmm.
Something happened with my video and audio there. All right.
But I think what you were saying was all three of us are raising young boys. We also are raising daughters, and you know, and what that means, particularly for families as they are thinking about what to do with this new president that's coming in. So Nayara, you were making this point about the kids that we're raising.
Yeah. I mean, I think for us, this is not just about being the partisan or electoral workers. This is deeply personal, because we are raising young boys. We are also raising daughters. I mean, so this is that generation that we're talking about. And I would love to hear, as we wrap this up, how each of you is bringing this home, because I do think about how my son is going to grow up and how he's going to treat women.
Well, you know, one thing, Millie, I think about this, and it's one of the reasons why I went to even go work for Kamala Harris when she was in the White House, was because I want both of my kids to grow up seeing like a strong woman of color who is in charge, right? You know, they have a mom who is a strong woman of color who's in charge. She's in charge around here. She's in charge of work. She's in charge of a lot of things. but also having, you know, having a president to look up to. I remember a white friend of mine calling me when Barack Obama got elected and saying, "It's amazing. My kids will grow up in a world where having a black president is not an exceptional thing. And I want my kids to grow up in a world where having a female president is also not an exceptional thing."
When I told my son that Kamala Harris was going to be the nominee for president, he said, "Oh, yay. That means we can have a woman president. And that means my classmate who wants to be president can be president one day." Like, he immediately connected it to his friend who always says she wants to be president. And now she can see that for herself, because we talk about, obviously, I mean, I work at Planned Parenthood. We talk about all the things, okay? And so I want to raise a young man who respects women, appreciates women in charge, and understands that women can lead without men losing something.
Right. Amen. All right, Melanie Newman, thank you for joining us here on Trailblaze.
Thank you for having me. It's so fun being with my friends. I love this podcast. Thank you, guys.
Absolutely. Nayara, you are working on a bunch of stuff in this space. You have been for a long time. And before we let Melanie go, you asked that really great question before we left. But I would love for you to just give us a window into what this world is like for you as you have been navigating these spaces. And I saw you on, I'm thinking about this because I saw you on TV the other night arguing with one of our colleagues on television, and I thought you were kicking his butt.
I saw that mug sip.
How you do that? Exactly. And the mug sip was classic. I hope somebody like clipped that. We need to put that out.
It was amazing.
As a t-shirt. But how you navigate that? I mean, like, this is a real life for you. I think we lost your
audio. I think
audio.
She's on mute.
No, I'm not on mute.
We can hear you now.
Okay, there you are. Now you're back. You're back. Yeah, so how do you navigate that?
I navigated it very differently in 2016 when I felt like I was still lucky to be showing up in some of these spaces, which included being on TV or, you know, being invited to talk about my opinion and my perspective. And so I would do the thing that I felt like was acceptable. Like, okay, someone is crazy talking next to me, but I need to be the rational person who comes across very measured and thoughtful. And I think that was a trap. And we all realize that was a trap in these conversations, whether they were public or private, because when you're not pushing back and the other side is creating a narrative that is based on lies and falsehoods and just bravado, if you don't expose that, you're allowing it to literally to grow and bloom. Like the nasty little mushrooms are taking over, and suddenly they're not only in the dark, they're everywhere. And mushrooms grow mm-hmm. really insanely quickly. Just a random data point. And so I approached it very differently now in this what feels like a very similar about the identity of America election. And also because I have two kids, like I have had to check the crazy in my own household. No, you are not going to be eating a pack of Oreos and watching TV at 5:30 in the morning. You're going back to sleep. That is what a boundary looks like. And that is, and you can be upset and it's okay. Right. That attitude, I think, and I will call it attitude because it was a state of mind, has served me personally much better in representing what women are feeling when I'm at a table and it's three men, each of whom have very big egos and platforms, wanting to talk over each other and over me about what women are doing in this election cycle. I feel a lot more comfortable now saying, hold up, I'm going to say something. Let me remind you what the experience is. And it's also recognizing that that's why I'm there. Right. The idea of, I'm there at the table to do that and to channel that. And I loved that Kamala Harris and the Obamas no longer are talking about when they go low, we go high, because we can't norm our way through all of the things that have been destroyed. They are stepping up. Right. They are calling it out. They're, you know, taking the fight in a way that is meaningful for Democrats and isn't simply being ugly.
We've been so conditioned to the benefit of the doubt of the other side.
Yep.
But they deserve no benefit of the doubt. They are telling you exactly what they're going to do. They're not hiding it. They're saying the quiet part out loud. So we have to do the same.
Yep.
Amen. All right, Melanie.
Thank you so much. Bye, guys.
Talk soon. Bye.